Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 87 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Leonard, joined as always by Todd. Todd, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great, as usual.
The preamble to the show before we started recording, before the mics went hot, was a history of the World Wrestling Federation and WCW titles.
Yes, you give me all the wrestling news that I need, and I give you all the Doctor Who news you don't want.
your buddy Adam mentioned that the history of wrestling is richer and more rewarding than that of the of Doctor Who, and I would be hard-pressed to disagree with that statement.
That is true. Doctor Who characters never got paid in interesting things instead of money.
That's right. Doctor Who never caused a riot in Puerto Rico.
That's right.
He never got stabbed on the way to the TARDIS.
No, not that I know of.
No.
In fiction, maybe, but not in real life, you know?
I would attempt to name an actor who played the Doctor, but I would just embarrass both of us.
But there was one episode where I think they did have a stunt granny, so I think that's where they cross over.
There was actually, there's a little fanzine about wrestling that I read that was talking about, how in England they did a bunch of different reality shows based on wrestling, and there was one that they did that premiered the same night as the most current iteration, like whenever they brought, like whatever the gap between like the last set of Doctor Who and the current Who Renaissance we're in.
Right.
Whoever that Doctor was.
That was the ninth Doctor, Christopher Eccleston.
Okay.
So you know.
So when they did that, like they both premiered on the same night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, wrestling was, you know, kind of dipping down a little bit. Doctor Who had been off TV and kind of was considered, you know, a non-entity for quite a while. And it was apparently just like a slaughter.
Wrestling beat Doctor
no,
Who?
No, Doctor Who just, how dare you, of all the people in the world, to defend wrestling. Making
That's
me look like a fool.
I'm being jovial. I'm a yuckster with that.
So, coming to the show, as we're vamping just a bit, I actually thought there would be very little news to talk about this week.
No, you got pre-news for news.
I forgot about pre-news. I honestly did. I forgot that they do all those pre-announcements to get in before the actual announcements happen, so they can actually get some buzz to their announcements.
Sure, because the big announcements will be like, you know, Hunger Games and other stuff. So you don't want to compete with that in comics at the Comic-Con.
Right, they're apparently going to have a Captain America 2 trailer. They're going to have footage from the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. All sorts of fanciful things. Because as this podcast is in your ears, San Diego is San Diego Comic-Con, San Diego, or Comic-Con International, as it's referred to, is currently going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I tweeted last week in Entertainment Weekly's coverage of Comic-Con International, the 24-page spread. How many of those pages were actually devoted to comics?
Zero?
Two.
Two?
Two. And they crammed a lot into those two pages.
Good. I'm glad they can cram.
So we do have talk of other cons other than San Diego. We have all the pre-con news and announcements. We have information about the Harvey Awards, which Todd does not like, but I do, only because a lot of my favorite books get announced in there. Also, the books that were labeled for Halloween Comic Fest 2013, which is what it will be heretofore known as, not fake Free Comic Book Day.
Good, good. I don't like when you call it that. It makes me angry.
It makes me angry, too, you know, because that's what it was. But now they're actually taking it serious, so that makes me very happy. We have tons and tons of books that are on sale digitally, and I'm sure more will be announced in between the time of this recording and this being posted. Free books, of course. Tons and tons of books that we read from last week to go over, and what we're most looking forward to coming out this week. I don't know if we're going to cross over.
I think there's a 50-50 chance.
Yeah, because I got two books. I got two books, maybe a third. A third just gets an honorable mention. Mm. And I think you know what that honorable mention book is, but we'll get into that when the time is right. And, of course, we also have our question from last week, the best last issue, the best finale of a series, whether it be a mini-series, maxi-series, a full-length series, a creative team. I was not surprised by a majority of the answers that we got. Some of the answers, though, did make me long for a mistake that I made many years ago that we'll have to come to grips with together.
Okay. Do you want me to hold your hand while you do it?
Yes. Okay. You're going to need to hold my hand, put your arm around me, tell me it's okay, even though I know I did not make the right decision.
Gotcha. I'll do my best.
So San Diego's going on right now. Hopefully any of our listeners are out there having fun. Please do so. If you are out there and you want to pick me up the Charles Soule Oni book, letter 44, and I'll reimburse you for it.
See, you got to tell me this stuff. My friend's already there.
Oh, there you go.
I want to get it. There was a couple of things I was thinking about getting, but I ended up changing my mind. So
Oni just announced their exclusives today.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's why I was not aware that it was going to be available to pass it along.
Gotcha.
So what I was mentioning, what I was getting to was New York Comic Con is the next big one that you're going to be going to in October. I know you're going to Baltimore, and Baltimore hasn't swole up just yet. But New York is like the second biggest. And I guess there was some people online talking about how the creators at Artist Alley are seeing a little gouging from New York Comic Con.
Yeah. I know somebody who, you know, had a table there, and they get a little crazy on their prices, and they're only going up from what I hear.
Yes. It used to be that the pros got, at the very least, a free entry, but now they have to pay $25, and Artist Alley people now have to pay $500 for a full table, where in years past, the cost for a table at Artist Alley was nothing.
Well, it depended.
Right.
It depended on, because the way it was explained to me by somebody who goes to cons is if you're a guest, you don't pay anything. Like, you have to look at the way the creators are on their, you know, page. Like, if you're a special guest, like, I guess it could be like you get the hotel room and maybe airfare, which would be like your truly big guns, like Stan Lee and other stuff. And then there's like your guests who I guess they get free tables and stuff like that, but maybe they have to pay for their hotel room and ticket. I don't know. So there's like different levels, and then there's just Artist Alley, where if you want in, you got to pay for the like everything.
Yeah, and again, it's terrible because that's a way to chase people away. But maybe they were looking at how much money they were losing, and decided they need to kind of cut things. Cut it off of the past. Like, look at other cons. I don't know what people pay to get in, like, the Wizard World cons or anything like that. I can only imagine what you pay if you're just a, you know, not a big-name guest or a featured guest or a special guest or however they announce you as at San Diego. I can only imagine if you're just, like, regular Joe Schmo what you have to pay.
Right. Well, I don't know how much money they could be, you know, needing, and I never count anybody else's money. That's my motto. But I look at, you know, the amount of people that they have go through there. And I honestly just think it's a, you know, like, yeah, you could charge something. You could charge a little bit. Because I know for a ticket to go to Baltimore, if you get a table, it's $5.
Oh, that's, I think, respectable enough not to chase people away. And at least they're making a buck.
Right. And then I don't know. I think the tables now, granted, it's only 2 days as compared to 4 days, you know, at New York. But I think it's $250 for a table for the weekend. Now, that's something where a small artist who's not going to charge, you know, like if Adam Hughes was still doing, you know, commissions where he was charging $200 and $400 and he was getting, you know, like four or five of them done in a whole weekend. You know, he's making his money back off the table before he sells sketchbooks and stuff like that. But some of these young, like lesser known artists, you know, they sell their sketches for like $20, $30, $50. You know, that's a lot to sell back for, you know, you're like almost $600 for your ticket and your table. And then on top of that, like, you know, usually you have to get a hotel room or something like that. So it really only works for the big names. But, you know.
But we'll see. Maybe this will be the turn of things, as it were, how it's going to be for all cons. And we'll see. Maybe this will be the year that New York blows up, because then they'll have weeded out some people, or maybe this will be the year that no one goes to New York and they have to change their policy.
Yeah, and then they're going to have to find a bigger place to at the rate they're going, because it's coming, you know, it's San Diego on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I can't wait to go to New York, and I can't wait to go to Baltimore. I'm chomping at the bit for cons.
Well, I got in trouble for pointing out the difference between chomping and champing. Apparently, both are acceptable.
I saw that. I'll have to ask. That'll be more wrestling stuff after the show.
So, we talked about New York Con. Of course, we do have coming up, you know, in October. And again, I want to call it correctly, Halloween Comic Fest. They announced what the freebies will be given away. And freebies, of course, I mean what's available at your local comic book shop. Your retailer will probably have to pay for those. And it's a really good sampling of things, both scary stuff, stuff for kids, stuff for a little bit older of kids. A couple things that surprised me to see that they were giving away as part of the freebies was the full-size Batman Little Gotham number one, which is a great book. Marvel has given away Thor God of Thunder number one. And the reason I say these are surprising is because, one, they're both relatively new books, and two, they're awesome books.
They are. I kind of look at it as, you know, the Halloween thing is for the kids, you know, and
yes.
So you have to have your, you know, Batman, the cartoon books, and other stuff that's in there. But you know what? Who's bringing those kids in? You know, so, like, have something that is very, very good, and maybe these people will pick it up for, you know, if they've never read a comic or if they're reading a reading comics and haven't tried them. To me, it just seems like a good idea. If Marvel can do it, you know, and DC can do it, good for them. Maybe they'll pick up good new readers on a really good book.
Yes, and one of the other ones, one of the mini books that are given away, it's just like a half-size book, is Itty Bitty Hellboy number one from Dark Horse is being given away in October, and I think issue 3 of the book will be out the same day that that's available. So that's kind of cool that that new of a book is being given away, you know, a smaller version of it, but that given away that quickly. But all the big companies, Archie has stuff, as I mentioned, DC, Marvel, IDW, Image, Boom, you know, everybody's got stuff. Check them all out. You know, I'm excited for Halloween Comic Fest, and I'm sure I'll be bringing the man there in costume to paw through everything at the local shop.
Mm. Any ideas as what he'll be this year?
No. He's been saying lately, Iron Man dress up, Batman dress up, Hulk dress up, as though he wants to dress up as these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how they button hook you with these costumes, right?
Yeah.
So they sell an Iron Man costume, and I'm sure you've seen a child's Iron Man costume.
Yes.
A child's Iron Man costume is $15.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want the gloves that have the repulsor ray gimmick on them, those are $20.
Oh, well, those, you know, they light up.
Right. A Wolverine costume is about $15. Do you want the gloves that have the claws on them?
$20.
Those are $20.
Gotcha.
That's how they get you. It's the add-ons.
It's the accessories, is what you're saying?
It's the accessories. So, yeah, again, you know, we had planned on getting him, you know, he's into superheroes as much as any kid can be at that age. And, you know, we don't know what he's going to be. He will change his mind a million times between now and then. And I'm sure whatever he has, he will wear all the time afterwards as long as he fits in it.
I have a little Doctor Who scarf if he needs.
Oh.
I would love to see your boy go as Doctor Who for Halloween.
See, I don't want to dress him up as something that he doesn't know.
Well, that's why I'll have to come over and let you borrow DVDs and stuff like that, and he'll be a Doctor Who fan in no time.
We'll see.
But
anyway. Listen, he's a big fan of Doctor Doom. That's about as close as you're going to get to a doctor and someone who you like.
Okay. You never know. I can convert.
If there was a Doctor Doom costume out there, I'd be all over it in kid sizes.
Yeah. I might even buy it for him. I'd help with gauntlets for the kid. A Kickstarter campaign.
Oh, boy.
But anyway.
So, you know, we talked about the New York stuff. We talked about the Halloween Comic Fest. But let's get into all... Well, actually, I want to talk about the Harvey Awards only real quickly. They give those away in Baltimore, correct?
I think so, yes. I get confused on the Eisners and the Harveys at where they give them away.
I'm almost certain that the Eisners are in San Diego and these are in Baltimore.
Yes, that sounds about right.
Yes. But, you know, the big categories, your best writer, your best artist, your best book, it's all stuff that, you know, for the most part that we read. You know, best writer is your Matt Fraction, your Scott Snyder, your Brian K. Vaughan, your Mark Waid's. Best book, as I see here, and then they have best new series, best continuing series, best single issue, and, you know, it's mostly all stuff that we read. Hawkeye, Saga, Batman, Daredevil, So
I'm more of a Harvey guy than an Eisner guy. So
yeah.
It's more mainstream to me. I know I'll get flack, but I looked at the voting and the announcements, and I'm like, I'm cool with all this. I would just personally vote any saga in all categories, whatever it is, writer, artist.
Now, see, that's the thing, because a lot of these categories, you know, it's, you know, when you narrow it down, it's saga versus Hawkeye versus Daredevil in a good chunk of them.
Right.
Whether it's writer, whether it be artist, and that would be tough for me to, like, make the distinction.
Nope, saga all the way.
Saga all the way.
Yep.
See, I don't know. I would be torn.
See, well, I guess Daredevil does have the time in on it compared to Saga, because it's been around, like, 10 issues longer.
Right.
So, I don't know. But, you know, Hawkeye, I would definitely put Saga and Daredevil before Hawkman, or Hawkeye. Hawkeye, right. But then it would be, you know what, I'd vote, I'd just, if they had a button that all Saga stuff, I would just push it. It's easy for me.
I'd be hard-pressed to disagree with you, and I'm sure I would probably be answering my question differently if I had a new issue of Saga in my hands, and I understand why they're taking a bit of a break, but I just read an issue of Daredevil the other day, and it was good, and I read an issue of Hawkeye the other day, and it was good. It's been about 2 months since I read an issue of Saga, so immediacy in my mind, you know?
Ah, what have you done? You're a what have you done for me lately guy.
I am. Okay.
See, I go for the artistic sense and the broader picture, but if you want to be that way, that's fine.
Actually, it's more so my hummingbird-style mind can only remember back so far.
Ah, you are like a goldfish.
That's right. My mind's like an Etch-a-Sketch. I shake my head and it just all disappears.
It's the way I always see it.
Yes. But. So let's get into some of those pre-San Diego announcements of all the new books that we got coming out. And there's a bunch of stuff. You know, we have James Robinson writing a book for Dynamite. Dynamite's getting a lot of stuff.
Dynamite's going crazy. They're in for
Dynamite that. Is going crazy.
They are in for that big push, and they want to take some of like those numbers away from Image. You know, because that's where like their target. Because you know, like DC Marvel is a bit of a stretch, but they want to, you know, they want to hamstring Image in the worst way. So
you know, they have the James Robinson book. They have the second Red Sonja book, and that's a really interesting one. I think it's what's the title of it officially is Legends of Red Sonja, and it's an it's a rotating all female creative team, both on art and writing it. And Gail Simone apparently is the one who spearheaded a lot of this, and she was the one that pulled a lot of these folks together. People who haven't written for comics in quite some time, people who write primarily for, you know, novels and things of that nature.
Right.
And, you know, it's going to be a very interesting project. And, you know, based on the initial early success of the Gail Simone Red Sonja book, Dynamite apparently is like, hey, we might have something on our hands here. Let's strike while the iron is hot.
Yes. And I like anthology books as long as they keep it, you know, at a decent price. Because there's been some of the, like those DC anthology books, they were like Time and Ghost. Remember all those? Like,
yes.
They're like $7.99, $8. Like that range, and I'm like, that's a tougher sell, but if you can keep it to, I don't know if they'd want short stories, maybe two little stories in it, that would be my main thing on how much it was. Other than that, I'd be all over a Red Sonja anthology book.
Right, it's definitely going to be a price point issue for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we mentioned, in regards to the James Robinson book that he's doing for Dynamite. They also have Dwayne Swierczynski is going to be writing a book for Dynamite for the new crime line that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Milligan's going to be writing a book. And there's also talk that Paul Cornell is going to announce a project at San Diego. And there's speculation that it's going to be Dynamite. So Dynamite, as you mentioned, they've got Image in their crosshairs and they are they mean business.
And you know who Dynamite can thank?
Who?
DC.
Yeah. Oh, for sending all the people away.
Honestly, as I don't want to, you know, disparage any of those names, but, like, you know, your Ed Brubakers and your other, like, big names, they all went to Image. Some of these guys got fed up with DC, and where's the only other place to go? Like, Marvel's full up. They seem to have their stuff together and their creative teams and where they're going in their books, and it might be a little while before they shake things up because they look like they want to show stability. So, like, Dynamite's like, come on over, you know, bring your projects. If you have any of these pulp characters you want to try, you know, there's a lot of incentive for them to go there right now because of DC. And good luck to Dynamite, because I've been loving Dynamite lately.
And I'll say this, they're also knocking on the door of IDW as well, I think, because they have a lot of licensed properties that are coming over to them. They just announced Steve Niles of, like, 30 Days a Night is going to be doing an Army of Darkness book for Dynamite, which is ignoring all the other Evil Dead Ash comics that have existed and treating it as a direct sequel to the Army of Darkness movie.
Right.
Cullen Bunn is bringing Heroes back at Dynamite. So, you know, those are properties with some cachet in the comic book world.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny because I love IDW for certain titles, but it seems like they're a property-driven company. Like, I don't know what IDW has that is owned by themselves, because it's all like Doctor Who, Transformers, G.I. Joe, Star Trek. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones as you go down. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, is owned by Nickelodeon now.
Right. My Little Pony.
Yeah. They don't have any original stuff. And that's where I think Dynamite's going to overtake them, with some of these, you know, creators having new and original ideas, I think is really cool and could help them out a lot.
Well, time shall tell. We will certainly see. And it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, which of those two, hopefully they don't consume each other. Because right now, like I said, we got a lot of good indie stuff. You know, Marvel and DC are Marvel and DC. Image is number three by, you know, quite the margin. But then you got, as mentioned, you know, we're talking IDW. Dynamite is coming up. Boom is coming up. You know, a lot of these companies are making some real headway.
Yep. Everybody's trying to get a chunk of that money.
Not that I blame them. Not that I blame them.
I don't. I want my money. I know you want your money. We all want our money.
So the last set of exclusives that I want to talk about announcements. I almost said friend of the show. Friend of the show. Favorite of the show. Jimmy Pamiotti had two big announcements. One, his Painkiller Jane series that he did way back in the 90s is coming to Marvel under the Icon imprint. And didn't they do a Painkiller Jane TV show?
Yes, they did. I think it was
terrible.
That I don't know because I didn't watch it. But I think it was the woman who played the female Terminator in Rise of the Machines, Logan.
Yes.
I think she was the person who played Painkiller Jane. I remember. I think, was it Sci-Fi, I want to say?
I think it was.
That
I think it was
that?
A Sci-Fi original series.
No Sharknado, but...
Oh, boy. I'm already over Sharknado, just as a side note.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm saving it for a day, alone time with the fancy gentleman. We want to sit down and watch some Sharknado, maybe. But
I think your time would be better spent watching Royal Rumble 92.
Okay.
Something just happened. Trust me on that one.
Something happened there. I'll have to get that's
it's
more
a classic.
That's more wrestling talk after we get off the show.
That's right. So so that's coming back at Marvel Icon, and then they just announced that he and Amanda Connor are going to be doing a Harley Quinn monthly at DC. Whether it's spinning out of Villains Month, who knows? Probably going to be coming out in November, December, since we already have the October solicitations. But somebody online said, as much as I'm not too keen on the current Harley design, the only person who can get me into it is Amanda Connor. And the initial image for it is pretty cool.
But from what I understand, she's not drawing it.
Oh, no?
No, she's writing it with Jimmy.
But and she's doing... I'm sure she's... Like, she did that cover, and I'm sure she'll be doing the covers.
I thought the article that I read, she wasn't doing the... that they haven't mentioned who the artist is. But it's
But I'm saying is, even if she's doing the covers, just her involvement.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying... But she's... I thought you were saying she's definitely doing the interiors, though. Okay.
No. I have no idea. I just saw that initial image, and that initial image
looks good.
Awesome.
It looks good. And I don't know if you know, I'm a fan of Jimmy Palmiotti. Yes. He does that little Western book that I like. So yeah, I'm all over this, and I've enjoyed, I'm one of the minority, I guess. I've enjoyed Harley in Suicide Squad. It's had its ups and downs. As a matter of fact, this last issue was really good, and of course, DC's, you know, got rid of the writer. But I'm definitely going to be all over the new Harley Quinn run.
So yeah, those are books that are going on the immediate wait-and-see pile for when they get solicited, so I can move them up to the main list.
In triplicates.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. So.
So, I think that covers all the news, all the preview-y stuff that's coming out, and I'm sure you're listening to this now, and there's heaps and heaps of news coming out of San Diego, and we're going to talk about as much as we can next week's show, because so much comes out. It's just crazy.
It is. It's actually hard to keep up. Like, as a fan, you know, I have a little news reader app on my phone and everything, and I try to check it out, but, you know, a lot of the articles are like, here's 40 things that happened. So you have to go through the articles, like, you know, the major stuff they're going to announce with big headlines. But I don't know how many times I'm like, oh, you know, like 17 lines into the of news into this article. I'm like, oh, I want that. I want to do that. I want to read that. And it takes me days, you know what I mean, to glance over most of the stuff.
Usually what I end up doing with my phone is, even though my phone's been real junky on me lately, I know last year whenever I would see something tweet out about something, I would open up the tweet through whatever Tweetcaster or whatever it is that I use on my phone, and then I would email it to myself. I would email the link directly from Twitter to myself.
Ah, okay.
So I would come home and I would have like 50 emails, but I would know what they all are, and I would have all my links ready to go of what so I don't miss something.
Right. Well, my thing, the way it works is you can look at articles and read them from the web. And then if you like it, you could save them in this little thing. So I have a folder where I can go, oh, look, there's everything that I was somewhat interested in. So it works kind of nice.
Mr. Internet.
I'm Mr. Technology.
So let's move on to what we got digitally going on. Of course, Marvel has some free books available through Comixology this week. They have Ultimates 3, Issue 1, from Jeff Loeb. They have Spider-Men, which was the crossover between the Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man and the regular pre-Doc Ock Spider-Man. And they also have Moon Knight Number 1, that being the Brian Bendis, Alex Maleev Moon Knight run that unfortunately did not do well. I had high hopes for it, but those hopes were dashed, unfortunately, very quickly.
There's been a few volumes of Moon Knight, right?
Yes. Gotcha. This is the fourth volume of Moon Knight Tales. So those are all available for free, and there are some sales going on as well. Hoax Hunters from Image, written by Tim Seeley, that's available for sale until the end of the week. We mentioned before, Dynamite is, you know, having a quote-unquote clearance on all of their Red Sonja stuff. Pretty much every Red Sonja book that they have is available on sale. And Top Shelf Publishing has, I think, everything that they put out available on sale. And they've put out some good stuff, kind of under-the-radar stuff, most notably within the last 12 months, Underwater Welder by Jeff Lemire, written and drawn by Jeff Lemire. A very good chilling story. And that's up for some Eisners and Harveys and so forth. And I think you can get that for literally a song.
I want to try that. I've heard a lot about that, like you said.
Yes, it's very good. I know a lot of people are not too keen on Jeff Lemire's art. It's very different. It's very unique. But I think it definitely, there is no story that it fits better than this one.
When it comes, when it comes to his art.
I was going
to
say, also, Lemire's Essex County is available for sale. From Hell is for sale. A bunch of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen stuff that went through Top Shelf, you know, in between other publishers that may have been put out through.
Mm-hmm.
But the entire giant graphic novel of Underwater Welder is $4. $4.
That's a good deal.
That is a great deal.
Yes. How many issues was that?
It was just one graphic novel.
Oh, okay. When you say graphic novel, sometimes, you know, not like they put a miniseries and it's a graphic novel. I got confused.
Mm-hmm. No, it was just like one deal. It was a big, like, oversized deal, too.
Cool.
Because they're claiming the price is $9.99, but I don't remember paying no $9.99 for it. I remember paying a lot more.
Maybe they're talking about the digital price before the sale.
Possibly.
That would be logical.
possibly. Well, let's not bring logic into it. So yeah, check out all that digital sale stuff. And if you're at San Diego, Comixology is there, and they always, always, always give away free stuff. So go check out their table.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of stuff, and speaking of digital, this would be a perfect time for us to mention our new sponsor. Our new sponsor being Transporter. No, not the Jason Statham movie. File Transporter. It's almost like your own private cloud device, kind of like Dropbox, but it's a physical unit. I'll be completely honest with you. I'm not too hip or keen to this cloud storage. To me, I understand that it exists, and I understand my information is there, but I'm always one for a physical device. And that's what the Transporter gives you. You can also access the files on your Transporter device through iOS or Android, your Windows and Mac. You can use it just like Dropbox. If you're familiar with Dropbox, then I know Todd and I are familiar with Dropbox. And you can have all sorts of different price points for how much storage you want, all the way up to 2 terabytes worth of storage. And 2 terabytes worth of storage is 1 million pictures.
That's a lot of pictures.
That's a lot of pictures. I got a lot of pictures of the baby. I don't think I got 1 million. But if for some way I got up to 1 million, there's a 2 terabyte version of the Transporter out there, and I could put them all on there and never have to worry about them again. There's no monthly fees. You pay the one time, you're good to go for the lifetime of the unit.
Yep. And if you'd like to pick up this product or any of their other stuff, go to filetransporter.com/longbox and use the code longbox for 10% off the Transporter or any of their other products.
Yes, indeed. So they're a new sponsor on board, and we're moving some savings along to you to check that out.
Yes.
So let's get into some books that we read from last week. Todd, where would you like to begin?
Let's start with what I was looking forward to most, Quantum and Woody.
Yes, we both were looking forward to Quantum and Woody, written by James Asmus, late of the Gambit series through Marvel, and art by Tom Fowler. I just learned today that Tom Fowler is only on for the first 4 issues. They haven't announced who the next artist is, but I'll be sad. I've always been a fan of Tom Fowler's art. It's very different and unique, and I was concerned on how it would fit into a superhero book. And I really liked his art in this book, but let's talk about the quality of the entirety of the book. You start.
Well, it's not my Quantum and Woody,
mm-hmm.
but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I had fun with it. I laughed out loud a couple of times between the car gag. I like the way they do still put the little blurbs like that they used to mm-hmm. in the old Quantum and Woody, like, you know, with the black background, and it's like, may the road rise up to meet you is the first one. Well, there's one with Woody in a car, and that made me laugh. And then the hazmat suit with the two of them made me laugh. And like I said, I went into this with an open mind as I could because, you know, like we said, Quantum and Woody is one of my favorite books of all time. And while it didn't meet that to me, it was a good book that I'll keep reading, and I had a good time on it, and it's, you know, it's different, and I've accepted that.
The best way that I could kind of explain this to you, to kind of put it into terms that you understand, how you say that Quantum and Woody is one of your favorite books of all time. Mm-hmm. I like that book a lot. It's one of my favorite runs of a book, but I don't have the same attachment to it as you do.
Okay.
I have a much greater attachment to the Joe Kelly Deadpool run. They just announced Marvel is putting out an omnibus of everything that Joe Kelly did, Deadpool. I love that book. I own it in single issues, I own it in trade, I own it in digital, and I will probably pick up that omnibus.
Mm-hmm.
And every Deadpool story I have read since is compared to that story. And in my mind, it is nowhere near as good.
Mm.
But this book made me long for those days of that old Quantum and Woody book, and it made me reminisce and wax nostalgic. And I know we'll never get that Quantum and Woody back, and I'm very happy to have this Quantum and Woody in its place in 2013. I'll take it. I enjoyed this book. I had a lot of fun with it. I was smiling almost the entire time, just remembering that old story. you know, the old run, and just looking forward to what comes next with this one.
Right. I'm the same way. Like I said, it's just hard to compare anything to that for me, as you did a great job with the Joe Kelly Deadpool stuff. But, you know, like I said, I don't need that book. That book's gone, and I almost don't want it back. Like this far away, like we always talk, sometimes you can't go home. But this is a new, fresh take on it. It's fun, made me laugh, like you said, made me smile throughout it. I'm a little less on Tom Fowler's art. I'd like to see who is going to be the artist next. It didn't ruin it for me. It's just it's a little wonky at times, but it fits the book. So I'm 100% okay with this book and going to keep on with it.
That makes me happy to hear.
I'm glad you like it too.
Yes, and I saw a lot of our listeners tweeted at us and said that they picked it up on our recommendation and were happy to see it, of course. So that makes me happy as well that a lot of our listeners are taking our suggestions to heart.
Two, you know, ancient sages throwing down knowledge. That's what we do.
Yes. Now, if I can pick a book, and this is going to be the guess for me, I'm going to steal your thunder.
Okay.
You had tweeted last week that there was an ending to an issue that broke your heart.
Okay.
I'm thinking that it was Astro City number 2.
Do you want the answer now?
Yes, I do.
It was.
Oh, my goodness. We had mentioned before, just moments ago, Todd mentioned how sometimes you just can't go home. This book proves us wrong. This book, Astro City Number 2 by Kurt Busiek, with art by Brent Anderson, is just as good as that original to me. It feels like it never ended. It feels like these stories have been going on, and I'm right back into that same feeling. It's the same creative team as it always was, going back to, what, 96, 97 was whenever the first issues of Astro City came out?
Yeah, it's always been Kurt Busiek and Anderson, right?
Yes.
I don't think they've ever done, you know, had a fill-in with anybody.
No, I don't think so. I'll have to go and check, but I'm almost certain that there was never anyone else other than these two. I know Kurt Busiek is the only one who's written Astro City. But I think that what we've seen so far with the first two issues, and of course it's all going to lead to something eventually. It's all going to lead to a bigger story. But so far, the strength of Astro City has always been, and is proven with these first two issues, is these single-issue stories.
Mm-hmm.
These one-and-done sort of stories that touch on a lot of different things that are going to come back and play something bigger in the future storylines. And this is a perfect example of it. The quick pitch for this one essentially is the Honor Guard, the Astro City Universe's version of the Justice League of the Avengers, essentially has a super mega call center to weed through every single call that comes into the Honor Guard to filter out which ones are the crank ones, which ones can be handled by the local authorities, or which ones need immediate assistance.
Yep.
And we get to meet some of the folks that work at that switchboard, and it was a great story.
Yep. Basically, I was at the shop just quickly explaining it to someone who was like, oh, that sounds interesting. I was like, imagine JLA had 911, and you had to root out the idiots. And they're like, I want to try that issue. I was like, that is so cool. And this is one of those, like, I slightly might disagree with you. I think it will play into something bigger, but I think the strengths of Astro City 2 were, like, especially that first mini and some of the other stuff, I think when it's single-issue stories, sometimes they don't have any, you know, down the line, and sometimes they do. I think the first one, because we saw that wacky guy talking, you know, that's going to be an overarching story. I honestly could see this being just like the some of the other stories where it's like one and done and not like a confessor storyline or the metallic guy who was trying to turn good or something like that. I can honestly see this just, you know, not being brushed under the rug, but that's the story I told and it's over. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I loved it. I got goosebumps as soon as you mentioned the words Astro City, and if that was the one, loved it.
Yes, and I was, you know, friends of mine ask me privately, they're like, what book should I check out, you know, a month ago, this month, and I tell them all the time, Astro City. Why never read it before? You don't have to. You understand what's going on. You'll see some analogs to some Marvel and DC heroes. That's fine. It makes you feel at home. It's like, oh, they kind of look like the Fantastic Four. Or that's kind of like their Batman. Or that's kind of like their Superman. But that's not the main crux of these stories. The main crux of these stories are the regular people. And Astro City is awesome.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yes. I recommend and all it, back issues, it, anything you can find, trades. But go ahead, sorry.
I think the first issue of the original run, either the original miniseries or the original ongoing, are both available for free on Comixology. So if you don't believe us, go check out one or both of those, and I feel you will be pleasantly surprised.
I do, too.
And this is a book that I feel, you know, with the writer that was on it, the creative team and everything else like that, this is a book that very well could have felt old coming out in 2013.
Yes, I totally see what you mean, like with the new 52 and the new feel and the way things have changed over the years with, you know, less costumey and to try to, like, tone it down. This is superheroes in the – and that's the thing. In the background, added, you know, big and bold and everything. But just like you said, the operators at the 911, the woman who is the – who's working it, she feels real. Like, they all feel real. Mm-hmm. And that's the brilliance of it, the way he mixes – total over-the-top superhero craziness with real-life, you know, people, and he almost never misses, and it's amazing.
Indeed.
Yay.
Astro City, great book. Should be getting more love from us, but there's tons and tons of great stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
So the next book I want to talk about, and I always ask you this, and I please correct me if I'm wrong. Are you still sticking with Superior Spider-Man?
Yes, I read Superior Spider-Man.
Right, but you don't read all the other Spider-Man stuff. You're not reading Deadly Foes and Superior Team-Up and Carnage and all that other jazz.
No, that I just couldn't.
I gotcha. So, issue 13 came out this past week, written by Dan Slott with the little assist from Christos Gage. The end of the Spider-Slayer storyline, they're trapped on the raft, the lizard, who is the lizard creature but has the mind of Kurt Connors, assists Doc Ock Spidey in taking down the Spider-Slayer. But to me, the real crux of the story is the end. Spidey's interaction, what he does to Jonah, and what he gets from Jonah,
mm-hmm.
I see nothing good coming from that.
I don't know. I think Doc Ock, you know, a stand-up guy, that we could only see wonderful things. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, I don't know what he's up to, but this is crazy, and I never thought we would be anywhere near, like, heading in this direction with this book.
That's the thing is, this book keeps you guessing in that respect. Like, you know Doc Ock is evil, and you know he's trying to be good, but his way of doing good and being that superior Spider-Man is... you know, doing things that a villain would do. And he's doing a lot of stuff that a villain would do. And I'm worried. I'm worried for Jonah. I'm worried for the people in Marvel's New York. I'm worried for everyone.
Why, Doc Ock's never been too ambitious. Come on.
Oh, boy.
No, but I do. I really like this book. I think it's fun. I mean, I know it's only a matter of time before we get back to Peter Parker as Spider-Man. But I'm enjoying it, and I love the whole interplay between Doc Ock Spider-Man and the Spider-Slayer and what the Spider-Slayer's real plan is. And you find out, it's like, no, you're not doing that because, you know, you're not the first to think of it. And I was like, this is like... all along the whole book, I'm like, you know, Dan Slott's just firing on all cylinders with ideas on this book. And I can't, you know, I love it.
Yes, it's very good. And I don't know if you follow Dan Slott on Twitter, but he
actually,
always...
I don't.
Oh, okay. He always has a good time at the expense of the people who regularly tweet him that by what he's doing on Superior Spider-Man ruined their childhood.
Oh, and they don't use the word ruin, right? They use another word that I absolutely hate towards that, but I'm not even going to get into. But yeah, it's ridiculous the way. I mean, like, Spider-Man will be back. This is a little run. You'll be okay. But go ahead.
Yes. Well, I don't know. You know, again, we're getting toward the end of 2013, you know, with solicitations, and I don't see Peter returning anytime soon. How long this is going to be a thing is going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So,
So continuing on here, a book that we mention quite frequently on the show is Walking Dead. Walking Dead 112 came out this past week. Get ready come October when it goes bi-monthly and the TV show is back. It's just going to be the Walking Dead podcast at that point.
Ours?
Yes.
I know, I'm kidding.
Oh, boy. So, hey, things are ramping up after that last issue, eh?
Yeah, you know how I was talking that Walking Dead has been a bit slow lately? Mm-hmm. Forget that. It's changed a little bit. And I think I could see how we're getting to that big storyline that they've announced for, you know, biweekly.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And again, it, under normal circumstances, if this was any other book, the end of this issue, you would say, oh man, it looks like so-and-so is so-and-so'd.
Mm-hmm.
But the characters involved and this book, you never know what's going to happen. And that's the best thing about this book. Just when you and again, it's so little about the zombies. And you know, there's a lot of people that I know that complain about how the zombie culture and complaining about how like zombies are so pertinent in every like pop culture sort of thing these days.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't reading Walking Dead, the comic book. If they're saying that, because it's about the zombies, but the zombies are so little to do with what's going on in everything in this book.
I agree, because not counting like, you know, oh, a zombie, you know, sneaks out of somewhere and they have to kill it. I'd have to go back and see how many issues it was since we had like a full blown like zombie attack where they had to kill a bunch of them. I think it goes back to when, you know, early on when Rick showed up in this town and the wall kind of gave way a little bit and they came through. And like, how many issues ago was that? So this book is mostly about like Negan versus Rick with, you know, who's on what side. And that's what it comes down to. And it's like you said, it's not about the zombies. It's always been about the worst thing you have to look out for is a person when things go bad. And that's, you know, what I love about this book.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, it's an awesome book. I don't know when the next, like, cutoff for a trade is. I think this might have been it.
I have to see. I don't know, because I sell them when it gets close to a cutoff point, like in a big chunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a couple. I think I have like two or three trades now, so I'll be looking for that issue. But
so yeah, Walking Dead is really good. They do a real good job of keeping you up to date, like when one trade ends and begins and so forth. So just keep your eyes out for that, because Walking Dead is good and always is good.
You said it.
Yes, and the last book that we're going to talk about from this past week is Batman number 22, the continuation of Zero Year, written by Scott Snyder, with art by Greg Capullo. The backup there by Raphael Albuquerque, who we mentioned last week, is taking over Animal Man. You know, I read this, but it wasn't on my list, but Todd asked for us to speak about it.
Yes, I did. And the reason is because I don't like the Riddler per se as a character, because I think he is the hardest character for a writer to write of the Batman, you know, villains, you know, because I look at like Mr. Freeze and you can have him as you know, a character who's, no pun intended, you know, cold hearted and, you know, tragic, or you could mix it up. Joker, you can have him from the Batman TV show to, you know, the Snyder Joker has his face off because he's insane, and I have no problem saying, well, he's a different kind of insane now than he was before. And, you know, and the other Bat villains, rogues, get in there. But Riddler, when you don't know how to write Riddler, it really, like, annoys me because they're terrible riddles. And that was the thing, the interaction between... there's an interaction between Bruce and Edward Nygma, and some of the stuff that he's doing and Bruce figures it out, I really love, because it wasn't so crazy that it made no sense to how he got from point A to point B, but it was really cool, like what Edward Nygma was trying to tell him and Bruce figured it out and what he did with it. And it's just as simple as trying to get out of a museum. And I'm like, Snyder has a grasp on Riddler, and he's making me like him, which not many writers can do. And I think that's the sign of, you know, why I love Batman right now so much.
I think the only other time that the Riddler was any sort of way enjoyable was the Paul Dini run, where he wasn't the villain when he was just trying to up Batman as a better detective.
Yeah, he had a whole detective agency and stuff like that. I read a little bit of that and I liked it. But it was weird because he wasn't doing the Riddle thing as much as I remember. Do you know what I mean?
No.
No. Right.
But I'm with you as well. Riddler is a tougher character to get than one would assume. Everyone just thinks it's like, oh, just do some riddles and you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
But that's obviously not the case. And I remember months and months and months ago when Snyder talked about how the next villain, you know, the villain in his next arc was going to be the Riddler. And this is the beginning of that. I'm excited.
Yes, me too. And that's why I wanted to talk about it. I think it's really cool. So you enjoyed it a lot, too?
Yes, of course. I love Snyder's stuff on Batman. I've been loving it so far. And Greg Capullo's art is awesome. He's another guy who... He hasn't changed his style all that much, but it fits this book.
And another thing with him, back when it was the Court of Owls, we had the upside down pages. You know, when he was stuck in the little city maze, crazy. And in this, we have the really cool Egyptian wheel where it's going around and you're following Bruce and Edward talking. It's got the little numbers, so it's easy to follow. I'm like, I just think he just shakes it up enough without being too crazy over the top to make it look interesting. And I love that about his stuff. Well drawn, well written. That's a double threat.
Yes, and I was just our local realtor Dave was lamenting about doing his September order with all the crazy villains issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I had sent him something separate of, here are the villains books that I'm getting. None of them line up to anything that I'm currently getting on any books at all.
Right.
So, I'm like, I'll probably be giving you just a separate list that month of stuff, but here's what I'll be looking to get.
Yep, I think it's going to be tougher for me. I'm just going to pull, as I get there. So, because we do it slightly different.
We do. And I think we will be doing our best when September comes along to assist you, the listeners, in getting through that difficult month.
Yes.
So that, I think, wraps it up from books from this past week. What is the book that we're most looking forward to picking up this week?
Okay, who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
So I do have to mention just one book. And that one book that I have to mention is a book that is only a year and a half late. And that book would be Scarlet Number 7. And Brian Michael Bendis, Alex Maleev. It's a great book. Is it worth the year and a half wait? I don't know. I can't imagine anyone other than me and John Seiler, one of our listeners, are excited for this book to be coming out, mm-hmm. or even know that this book is coming out. I wish Marvel was doing a better job of publicizing this, because it's a great book, but with, months and months in between issues, it's difficult to get any sort of steam on a book.
And yesterday I was in the shop when Dave was unpacking, and I saw it, took a little picture and sent it to you. But just so you know, it is in the shop. So if you don't get it, don't blame Diamond or anything like that. It's in the shop.
No. I know it exists. Believe me, I keep a close eye on those lists on a weekly basis.
Yep.
But that's just our honorable mention. And for this book, for me, how you said it could go either way, it could be 50-50. For me, it was in between two books. That I'm most looking forward to coming out this week. And I flip-flopped and I flip-flopped. And one book I've mentioned every week for the last 3 weeks. The other one we mentioned a bunch of times during the course of this episode. And I'm almost... If I had a coin on me, I would flip it to make my choice. But when I think about it, what is the book I'm going to read first this week? And the book I'm going to read first this week is Batman 66 by Jeff Parker.
Boom. I'm going to go out on a limb and say your other book was my book.
Okay.
And that's The Red Sonja by Gail Simone.
Yes, indeed. I'm excited for that book. I'm not a Red Sonja fan, but I am a Gail Simone fan. I'm very interested to see what she's going to do with this book. And this could open me up down an entire scary road of getting a lot of these sword and sandal sort of books.
Mm-hmm. And just for the record, my other book was going to be Batman 66. So we were kind of 50-50 and on the whole two book thing. And
I'm glad we covered both sides of that one.
That you know what? Sometimes it works out better when we don't have the same book.
Indeed.
So.
So those two books, definitely check out. I know that Batman 66 is a weekly digital book, so if you're a digital person, make sure that you're checking that out. If you're a print person for this one, you want to see those colors and these characters pop and lush right in your hands, by all means, go check this book out in your local stores today.
Get as many as you can.
Yes. So that, I think, wraps up what we're looking forward to this week, what we read last week. And before we get into the Twitter question, of course, you can always follow the show on Twitter at Weekly Longbox. You can follow Todd on Twitter. He is Roker the Joker. That's R-O-W-K-E-R, the Joker. I am L.F. Chikarason. That's L.F. C-H-I-K-A-R-A-S-O-N. On Twitter, and if you're not a Twitter person, you can always email me and give me any information, feedback, participate in our weekly questions at lfchikarson@ymail.com. So our question from this past week was, what is your favorite, the best last issue, the finale of a series, if you will? And we had some weird ones, I'll be honest with you, and leave it to... you know, longtime listeners of the show, Michael Hansgard, to pick Eclipso, The Darkness Within, and his significant other, Heather, to mention Marvel 2-in-1 100. And I'll be honest, that those are books I am not familiar with.
I have I have both of them. I've read Eclipso, The Darkness Within 2, and I'm working my way through the Marvel 2-in-1. So, but I remember I liked Eclipso, The Darkness Within. That was one of my favorite little crossovers at DC.
Mm-hmm. That was the first issue. That was the one with the gem on the cover, right?
Yeah, well, you could get it both ways.
Oh, you can get
it. If you're a real collector, you have it both ways.
So we also had recommendations from Michael Schaefer and Ryan Fisher of All-Star Superman, the Grant Morrison, Frank Quitely book. That's a great one. Our good buddy Josh mentioned Why the Last Man, and that was a close one. I would say that's like my number three. Very close to being my pick for the best finale of a book.
That was in my running.
Yes, fellow podcaster Al Kennedy out across the pond at House to Astonish mentioned Hitman, the Garth Ennis book, with art by John McCrae, and that's a great one. That was, I would say that's probably my number two.
Wow.
That's close. And, you know, we had a lot of other good choices here. John Seiler, who I mentioned before, the other Scarlet fan out there, mentioned Joe Kelly's I Killed Giants. Did you ever read that one?
No.
That's really good. Oh, my goodness. It's not a superhero book, of course. It's what's the best way I could explain it? It's about a young girl's journey and her dealings in a fantasy way of dealing with what's going on in her life. And it's a very heartbreaking end, not giving too much away, but it's a great ending, it's a great book. So much stuff I'm going to have to let you borrow, but you have so many books to read anyway.
Yes, I Killed Giants. Was that Dan Brereton who did the art?
No, oh my goodness. And this is the worst thing in the world. It was a...
I'm looking at it right now. It was, artist was J.M. Ken Nomura.
Yes.
Okay, I am thinking of something else, so, okay. But, no, I haven't read it. No.
So, I'm going to say what mine is before I kind of say what the one I'm the most upset about that I overlooked in not only this, but also my life. My pick was Preacher, The End of Preacher. Best last issue of a book. I love The End of Preacher. It's awesome.
Okay.
I still think about it all the time. Anytime I see a book that has Steve Dillon art in it, I am immediately brought back to the entire Preacher run and that last issue.
That is a great last issue.
So what's your pick?
Mine was tough because I was in there with Why the Last Man, Sandman, Preacher was in there, Starman was in there. But in the end, I had to go with Watchmen because I really enjoy the end of what I think Alan Moore did a wonderful job with it, where, you know, all the, you know, like with the whole plan and, you know, I did this whenever and it goes into it. And at the end, we're still really not sure if Ozymandias has saved the world because, spoiler alert, Rorschach sent his journal to that the New Frontiersman, which is the right-wing newspaper in that city. And the guy, he has, like, it's in the file where they clean it out every, you know, 6 months. So for the next 6 months, that's going to be in there, and they might find it and figure everything out, but we don't know. Just, but all in all, I just really think Watchmen's a great ending.
Watchmen is a great ending, but I don't know. For me, I think maybe I take the ending to Watchmen for granted.
Because it's everything up to that point?
I don't know. I think... How could I say this?
Okay.
The ending has become such... I don't want to say a punchline, but almost like a cliche of comics... that I don't think it, to me at least, packs the same punch.
Okay.
It's still a great ending. It's still a great book. It drives me nuts when people say Watchmen as a whole is overrated. It's definitely not overrated. But to me, as someone who has read Watchmen so many times and recommended Watchmen to so many people, like, I take the ending for granted.
See, it was funny. For a time there, I used to read Watchmen once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit, the reason I like Watchmen so much, it's definitely not overrated. I think people look at it because, you know, we're, I don't know how many years into the, you know, future since that came out, and everything has caught up to that. But that story in 1980, whatever, was so, like, so far ahead of its time that it, you know, it blew my mind. And when you still go back, you still, like, if you, putting things together, I'm like, oh my god, that was goes to this, and this goes to that, and like, I don't have any right at the top of my head right now, but it's just I always feel I get something new from it. I know we're talking about the ending, so but when I get to the ending, I'm like, at that time, it broke down all, like, you know, the monologuing that a villain does, and yeah, it may be a little cliched, but to me, I still, you know, really like it, and, you know, you see all the people, you know, perish, and you got to know them, and you got to care about them, so that's my choice.
It's a good choice. We had the one that I wanted to bring up, and this is the one that is a mistake, a lament of mine, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
We had listeners Jason Kirk and Noel Margate, both longtime listeners of the show, mention Irredeemable, the Mark Waid series. And the reason I say this is it's bittersweet for me, because the book was, I guess, maybe fallen behind a little bit, and it was an expensive book, and it also tied in with Incorruptible, and I ended up dropping it before it ended.
Mm-hmm.
So I never found out how it ended.
It was really good.
One of these days, like, that's the bucket list. Like, outside of, like, a few little holes, it's like, oh, I need one more issue. And then I have the entire, you know, single issue run of Sandman Mystery Theater. Or, you know, I need one more issue and I have that full, like, the full list of Amazing Spider-Man issues that I'm looking to fill that gap on.
Mm-hmm.
The 6 or 7 issues that I'm missing at the end of Irredeemable haunt me because they're very tough to come by.
Yeah, you know what? If you want to switch up I Killed Giants and some Irredeemable, we might be able to make that happen.
Maybe next week. Maybe bring them today.
Me?
Yeah, I'm talking aloud to myself.
But you got to let me know the numbers you need.
I mean, 30 not to the end.
40?
30 to the end.
40? Okay.
It claims it only went up to 37.
Oh, so then, are you saying 30 or 40?
30, issue 30.
Gotcha.
To issue 37.
Gotcha. Okay. I know I have them all. So, yeah, if you want, I'll bring them later today.
And I will go, and I, after we are done recording, I will put I Killed Giants in my bag.
How many issues was that off the top of your head?
Again, I just have the trade. I think it was like four, like, not prestige style, but like larger sized issues.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, again, I do thank everyone for contributing to our question this past week. And, Todd, you have a question for this week, do you not?
Yes, I do. And it ties into San Diego. Everything that's going on there. What would be your dream announcement at this week's San Diego Comic Con? You're like, this is, you know, like, you want to hear it. You want it to be a movie with this person. Make it, you know, you want a comic, you want a character to come back with, you know, this creative team. Or it could be just as simple as, you know what, I'd like to see, you know, this book just come back again. It could be anything. Make it as elaborate or as easy as you want.
Your dream San Diego announcement?
Yep.
Your dream San Diego reveal?
Yes. Told you it was vague but amazing.
Now this is my gut reaction. This isn't what it's going to be. I'm going to actually take some time to think about it, what I'd like to see announced at San Diego. I'm picturing the headline now. Ryan Reynolds retires from acting thanks Leonard F. Chikarson.
Wow. I'm thinking mine's going to be Ryan Reynolds signs for a 5-movie deal on Green Lantern to counteract your year one.
Ryan Reynolds to star, write, direct, and he's going to write, direct, and star as all the roles in a Justice League International movie.
Ooh, that one might be interesting. Maybe that he'll finally get that Deadpool movie made you're waiting for.
I can't even say the quote. But yes, if that happens, I'll just like, well, I won't need these eyes anymore. Catch y'all on the flip side.
But then I would play the whole movie for you.
Oh, that we can no longer be friends.
Okay.
So that's a good question. Just tweet that at us. Throw the hashtag GrizzWLQ in there, and we'll track them down, compile them all, and discuss them all here next week, along with the actual news. And hey, maybe you might guess something that actually gets announced at, you know, maybe your dream announcement is something that they've teased or alluded to at San Diego Comic Con, and maybe your dreams will come true.
Yes, who knows?
That's what we are. We're the dream makers here at this show.
Yes. It's our currency, if you will.
So, Todd, do you think we covered everything? Anything else we need to go over?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Well, again, thank you all for listening. This was episode 87 of the Weekly Long Box, and we will catch you all here next week.